Now, we're all familiar with the text in Matthew 24, verse number 37. As the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. And then it goes on to describe what they were doing in the days of Noah. And when we examine the Old Testament, we see very plainly what was going on. It says the whole world was corrupt before God, and the world was filled with violence. Now, how much more violent it's going to have to get, I do not know. I think we could certainly conclude that at some point here, we are in the end times. However, to try to put a date on that and say when such and such is going to happen is folly. But in any respect, we are living in very, very perilous times. And so our entire judicial system, which is regarded as the best in the world, can't solve the crime problem. And while it varies and goes up and down, depending on the locale and the particular decade and what policies are put in place by the federal government or the judiciary, it's just a constant repetition of crimes of one type or another, depending on the latest drug or whatever they come up with in order to for these criminals to make more money. So the question I'm going to pose today is, do you know the law? Now, what law am I talking about? I'm talking about the criminal law of God. Now, I can't possibly include all of the various aspects of this criminal law that are mentioned in the Bible, but I can cover a number of major areas with which we are familiar and a number of common things that we see around us all the time, crimes that are being committed, and how would the Bible manage those? Now, the world's not going to manage them, so, I mean, you can forget about any changes coming to really taking place. I've said before, and I've said it, I'll say it again. This government and our country was set up by the lawyers, of the lawyers, and for the lawyers. And so the system isn't going to do anything that'll jeopardize their incomes in the final analysis. Now, Paul said this in Romans, the 7th chapter. He, of course, here was speaking about the spiritual law of God, but I think in the broad sense we can certainly include any aspect of God's law, and the Bible, Old Testament, is full of it. Or do you not know, brethren, and then he says in parentheses here, for I speak to those who know the law. So the question is, do you know the law? And do you know the law specifically when it comes to criminal law? Now, why is that important? Well, you might not think it's important, but I can tell you what the Bible says here in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unrighteous? Now, who are the unrighteous? They're the jurists and the judges, the people who make up the court system, and the ones that Paul was referring to, of course, was the Roman, the Roman system of that day. Those people were called unrighteous. Now, of course, from the point of view of the world, they're not considered unrighteous, but from God's viewpoint, they would be. Do you go to law before the unrighteous and not before the saints? Do you not know that the saints will judge the world? That's right. That's the responsibility that's going to be given to the saints. Therefore, it is very important for you to know the law. Now, of course, I'm well aware, and I'm sure all of you are too. Law is going to be stamped out very quickly in the millennium. And we'll see here in a moment or two. Probably the implying, or let's say the implementation of this law will be short-lived. Some people would say short-lived, but whatever the case, it's going to be short-lived after the millennium starts. But it's a basis really for all of the things that are wrong in society today. Do you not know that the saints will judge the world, and if the world will be judged by you, are you unworthy to judge the smallest matter? Do you not know we shall judge angels? They are greater than men today. But the time's coming, it says, we will judge angels. How much more, then, the things that pertain to this life? If then you have judgments concerning things pertaining to this life, do you appoint those who are least esteemed by the church to judge? Who's the least esteemed? The judicial system of this world. because he says, he points out, brother goes to law against brother, and that before unbelievers. It shouldn't be. So that's why it's important that we have a knowledge of what the law of God is all about, and that certainly includes all of the aspects of criminal law. Now notice what's going to take place here. Acts chapter 3 and verse number 19. Peter says, you'd better repent and be converted that your sins may be blotted out, so that the times of refreshing may come from the presence of the Lord, and that he may send Jesus Christ who was preached to you before, whom the heaven must receive until the times of restoration of all things. That time is coming. Those who are qualified to be in God's kingdom will be participating in that entire new order. Now, we'll just look at a couple of brief descriptions here. Isaiah chapter 2. It shall come to pass in the latter days, verse 2, that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, come and let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways. We will walk in his paths. Out of Zion shall go forth a law. It's going out to the whole world at that time. And Isaiah 11, verse 9. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. The law of God, and that includes the law involving human behavior of all facets, will go out from Zion, and the whole world will know it. So that's a part of the responsibilities that the saints will be given. Now, if you look at how the Bible views the judicial system of this world, here's a typical example. Jesus gave it right here in Luke, the 18th chapter, and verse number 6. Then the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge said. Now, I don't know offhand of a single text in the entire Bible that refers to the judicial system or the judges of this world as being just. How can they be? How can you have a just system when that system doesn't even regard the law of God? I can tell you there's certain things that you don't ever want to say in a court. You don't ever want to refer to the Constitution as your rights having a constitution, that you have constitutional rights. You'll be dealt with very quickly by judges. They don't want to hear that, and it's not regarded as politically correct. That's why Paul said, do you set before you those who are least esteemed? And you go to unbelievers. That's this system. Now, if you look at this system we have going on in the world today, here's a typical problem. We all have seen happen many times. Ecclesiastes 8, verse number 11. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Now, how many years do these people spend on death row? How many appeals do they get while the lawyers are padding their pockets? How many times have you seen and read examples where someone was in jail for some period of time, maybe a shorter or a longer one, depending, and then all of a sudden he was released and went out right, committed another crime and killed somebody again? How many times have you read and seen that happen? Just endlessly. Parolees go out and repeat their crimes. Is a criminal system the kind of a system God would have? Is a prison system of God? Is a judicial system righteous in the sight of God? Not at all. Now let's look at some examples in the Bible. I've listed a number of things that we have seen happen all the time. We read in the newspapers almost on a regular basis. And, it might behoove us to just view it how God would view it. Here's Exodus 21, verse 12. What about murder? You know, we read in the book of Exodus, thou shalt do no murder. So here's what we read in Exodus 21, verse number 12. He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. You know what the judicial system is based on today? It's based on the adversary system. Now, where did it come from? It was a reaction to the abuses that were being done by the kings in Europe, who packed the courts, who sent innocent men to prison and to their death just at a whim. And the people finally got fed up with it. And in order to protect themselves, they set up a lot of things, including this adversary system, and then supposedly to be judged by a jury of your peers, which is misunderstood and not practiced today either. But the job of lawyers today is to get the man off regardless. Whether he's innocent or guilty, get him off. Get the lightest thing you can possibly get. And a lot of their task is obfuscating the jury. Throw up enough sand and smoke in the air that the jury's all confused and can't come to a decision. That's a part of the process. So how many men have you heard about or known about who are murderers who get off very, very lightly or certainly do not suffer the death sentence when it's a known fact they murdered someone? He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. Very cut dry. Now, you have people today that are against the death penalty. And probably with some reason. I'm not saying that's altogether wrong, because when you see the mistakes that have been done in the penal system and how many innocent men, it's like Jerry Spence said one time. He said that there is little justice for little people, meaning if you were a little person and you didn't have any money, you got very little justice. If you had big bucks and you could hire these hotshot attorneys, you could do practically anything and get off. We've witnessed that, haven't we? Or at least get off with something quite light. So the fact is, the system is such that justice cannot prevail. It's impossible under this worldly system, and we need to understand why. Now, Deuteronomy 19, verses 11 and 12. Deuteronomy 19, verses 11 and 12. If anyone hates his neighbor, lies in wait for him, rises against him and strikes him mortally so that he dies and flees to one of these cities. And I'll explain that in a moment, because they had what they call cities of refuge for certain types of crimes that were done. And if he flees to one of these and he thinks he's going to escape the penalty by going to a city of refuge, then the elders of the city shall send and bring him from there and deliver him over to the hand of the avenger of blood that he may die. Your eyes shall not pity him, but you shall put away the guilt of innocent blood from Israel, that it may go well with you. Is it going well with us today? We don't live in one of these big cities that has vast areas of ghettos and barrios and places like that where the crime is so rampant. And so consequently, we don't experience here where we live, but some of you hearing these tapes may. So the fact is that there's a lot of crime that goes on in these major cities that really involves murder and, as we say here, lying in wait, drive-by shootings, and this kind of thing that go on all the time. And the penalty God requires is death for that. Numbers 35, verses 16 and 17. Numbers 35, verses 16 and 17. If he strikes him with an iron implement so that he dies, he is a murderer, the murderer shall surely be put to death. And if he strikes him with a stone in the hand by which one could die, and he does die, he is a murderer, the murderer shall surely be put to death. And if he strikes him with a wooden hand weapon by which one could die, and he does die, he is a murderer, the murderer shall be put to death. The avenger of blood himself shall put the murderer to death when he meets him. Actually, the system that God had was that a relative, someone close to the victim, had a legal right to kill the murderer and would do so. And this is how justice was done. If he pushes him out of hatred, or while lying in wait, hurls something at him so that he dies, or in enmity, he strikes him with his hand so that he dies. The one who struck him shall surely be put to death. He is a murderer. The avenger of blood shall put the murderer to death when he meets him. Now, we'll see how this ties in with the next category. See, that's how murders were handled. Now, what about manslaughter and accidental death? How did God handle that? All right, let's notice here. Numbers 35, beginning here in verse number 9. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you cross the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall appoint cities to be cities of refuge for you, that the manslayer who kills any person accidentally may flee there. They shall be cities of refuge for you from the avenger, that the manslayer may not die until he stands before the congregation in judgment." So what happened was that if he killed someone accidentally, he fled to a city of refuge. There was a hearing, a legal hearing in front of the judges, and they determined whether it was an accident, and if it was an accident, he was not executed. What happened to him? "Well, you shall appoint three cities on this side and three cities," so on and so forth. So if he killed a man accidentally, then we read here, verse 22, "However, if he pushes him suddenly without enmity, or throws anything at him without lying in wait, or uses a stone by which a man could die, throwing it at him without seeing him, so that he dies, while he was not his enemy or seeking his harm." Accidental death, they happen all the time, don't they? "Then the congregation shall judge between the manslayer and the avenger of blood, according to these judgments." So they determine now that it was an accident. The avenger of the blood then, the nearest relative, maybe a son, a brother, someone could not kill this man who killed someone accidentally. "So the congregation shall deliver the manslayer from the hand of the avenger of blood, and the congregation shall return him to the city of refuge where he fled, and he shall remain there until the death of the high priest." That's right. It was almost akin to a life sentence within that city, depending on the age of the high priest. Now, why did God do that? Well, what would God do today to people who get drunk, and they're drunken drivers, and they go down the road and kill somebody? I tell you, what he'd do. They probably wouldn't die for it because it was an accident, but they'd go to a city of refuge, and that's where they'd spend the rest of their life, and they wouldn't be out driving down the highway killing somebody else again. How many times have you read accounts in the newspaper where there have been people who have been drunk over and over and over again, and they have DUIs just right and left, and they just got a little sentence or a fine or something of that nature, and they end up killing someone? That's an irresponsible judicial system. That's not protecting the public. You think God would tolerate that? Absolutely not. All right, what about kidnapping? Every once in a while we hear about kidnapping, don't we? Let's go back to Exodus 21. We have a brief statement here, and then we'll look at one in Deuteronomy 24. Exodus 21, verse 16. "He who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death." Kidnapping was a capital offense. That's how serious it is in God's sight. You know, we hear all the time about children vanishing, and this is a parent's worst nightmare. A lot of those children are kidnapped and stolen, carried off by sex perverts of one kind or another. There's probably other aspects of it I'm not going into here. But let us notice Deuteronomy chapter 24. Deuteronomy 24 and verse number 7. If a man be found kidnapping any of his brethren of the children of Israel and mistreats him, and this is the New King James Version, merchandising, I think, is probably a better translation because that's what the authorized version has, merchandises him, just uses him for a purpose, something to his advantage, some means by where he profits. And that can include a lot of things. Or sells him. Then that kidnapper shall die. You shall put away the evil from among you. Now, of course, the popular thing we have going on today is, we're going to sentence him to life without the possibility of parole. And I'm really wondering how long that's going to last, or how long it's really good for, because how many times have you heard, you know, the whole system is a joke. They stand up there and they say, I sentence you to 20 years. How much do they serve? 5, maybe. It's a joke. The prison system is so crowded, and there's so many criminals in there, that they can't bring about justice. It's too expensive. What about rape? Goes on all the time, doesn't it? Deuteronomy 22, verse number 25. If a man finds a betrothed young woman in the countryside, and the man forces her and lies with her, then only the man who lay with her shall die. But you shall do nothing to the young woman. There is in the young woman no sin deserving of death. For just as when a man rises against his neighbor and kills him, even so is this matter. For he found her in the countryside, and the betrothed young woman cried out, but there was no one to save her. Death sentence. Now, you read a little bit early there. I won't take the time to go into that. But if she's in the city, and she doesn't cry out, she's just as liable as he is. But since she was out in the country and nobody could rescue, in other words, it was presumed that if anyone heard or saw a crime going like that going on, they would intervene quickly. Nowadays, what are people liable to do? They won't get involved because here's a deep pockets lawyer. Lawyers are going to come, you know. A man defends his property in his home and he shoots some criminal, and then some deep pockets lawyer sues him for all he's got. I mean, this system is just pathetic. And you wonder why we can't solve any crime problems. What about assault? Well, we have assaults going on all the time, don't we? Well, let's notice a text here in Exodus 31. Exodus 21. Exodus 21, verse number 18. If men contend with each other, and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, and he does not die, but is confined to his bed. In other words, he injures you. Does that happen on occasions? You bet it does. But I can tell you this, by the time the lawyers get done and get their cut out of it, you know, there not only has been a great penalty, there's been, punitive charges, and I mean how much more? Sometimes people sued for millions of dollars. I was golfing one time on a golf course and met a fellow there. He joined our party and he started talking to us, and he was telling us that he got in some squabble with another fellow on the golf course, and they got to shouting at each other, and he shoved him, just shoved him is all he did. And he was brought up for trial, and he was arrested, and he said it was an absolute nightmare. Finally, after months and months, I think he had to make some kind of a settlement, but he said he'd never, ever do that again. He'd walk away. You're a whole lot wiser to walk away than do something like that, because it was so agonizing and so anguishing for him over a long period of time before it was finally settled. Some little minor thing like that. Here's a case where someone is injured in a contention. So he does not die, but is confined to his bed. If he rises again and walks about outside with his staff, then he who struck him shall be acquitted. And if you'll notice the margin, it says exempt from punishment. Because, you know, it may be that he, the one that got struck, initiated the fight. Here's what he has to do, however. He shall only pay for the loss of his time and shall provide for him to be thoroughly healed. That's right, he had to pay all the medical costs and everything involved. And so that gives you an example of how the Bible viewed it. Now let's go down here to verse 23. But what if it's a lot more serious than that? What if he kills him? That's murder. What if he just does something else to him? For example, if any harm follows, maybe he injured him in such a way that he disfigured him. Or he broke bones in such a way that there wasn't a proper healing back. If any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. That's called the law of lex talionis. Now, when you're dealing with a physical, carnal people like that, that's what they understood. So that gives you an example of how God viewed assault. Now we can go back to Leviticus 24, or go forward to Leviticus 24, and we'll notice verses 19 and 20. Leviticus 24, verse 19. If a man causes disfigurement of his neighbor, that's right, as he has done, so it shall be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. As he has caused disfigurement of a man, so it shall be done to him. That's right. I can tell you, if we had laws like that going on in this country today, people would think, they'd think twice before they do a lot of the things they do. Because they'd realize they're not going to get away with that kind of thing. It's going to happen to them. That's the kind of justice God requires. Now keep in mind, we're dealing with an Old Testament period. We're dealing with a physical nation. We're not dealing with a spiritual church, and we're not dealing with people who have God's Spirit. But it does give you an eye view of how God's going to judge the world when Christ returns, because the world isn't going to be converted when Christ returns. It's going to take some time. What about theft? Thievery, burglary, theft, it's one of the biggest things going on. You know, law enforcement officers will tell you that about, 90-95% of all the crime regarding burglary and theft and robbery is drug-related. They have to get money for their drug habit. Well, this is what the Bible says. Exodus chapter 22. Exodus 22. And we'll pick it up here in verse number 1. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it, or sells it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. Kind of expensive, wasn't it? You do something like that, it was going, and you got involved, you got caught, it was going to cost you a lot more than what you were guilty of stealing in the first place. If the thief be found breaking in and he is struck, so he dies, there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. And this is a presumption that he's doing it at night. So if he comes in at night and he gets struck and killed by the homeowner, nothing is done about it. If the sun be risen on him, there shall be guilt for his bloodshed, because he could be recognized and he could then be apprehended. So there's a difference between night and day. He should make full restitution, depending on what he stole here. And notice this, if he has nothing, he can't pay it, then he shall be sold for his theft. That's right. Notice the marginal rendering says, sold as a slave for his theft. That's right. He was made a slave until he paid it back. If the theft is certainly found alive in his hand, it hasn't killed it yet, whether it is an ox or a donkey or sheep, he shall restore double. So it wasn't as expensive if he didn't kill it or didn't sell it. But still, double is rather spendy. What about destruction or loss of property? You know, I don't know if you've ever gone through this, but have you ever lent a tool to somebody and then they brought it back to you broken? Yeah, that's happened, isn't it? Well, let's look at Leviticus 24. Leviticus 24, and we'll pick it up here in verse number 18. Whoever kills an animal shall make it good, animal for animal. Now, animals are property. They were worth money. And if you killed it, then you had to replace it. Just keep that in mind as a general principle. Years ago, up in Montana, there was a rancher there that they were running on free range, and he had a bull. And this bull was getting into other people's stock over there, and he'd been warned 3 or 4 times he'd better keep that bull in his own area there. And he just ignored it, and he went out there one day, and his bull was now a steer. That's right. These guys went out there, roped it, and castrated it. It's an expensive bull, you know. It was worth probably $1,000, $2,000. Now it was worth, all of those were just meat. Now, were they right to do that? No, they were not right to do that. But it does show you the lengths of efforts some people will go through. Here in Exodus chapter 22, Exodus 22 and verse number 5. If a man causes a field or vineyard to be grazed and lets loose his animal and it feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. That's right. He couldn't go in and freeload off of someone else. He had to be responsible for what he did. If fire breaks out and catches in thorns, so that stacked grain, standing grain, or the field is consumed, he who kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. You had to make it good. This is how you make people responsible. Now, we don't have laws like that today because, most people have insurance. And, it's so bad if you don't have, if he doesn't have insurance, you get insurance that covers him too, you know. The uninsured driver, you know. So you have to be protected. I guess that's the best we can offer in this world, but I mean, it really makes people irresponsible in a final analysis is what it does. We end up having to pay for everybody. So that gives you an example of how God viewed the destruction or loss of property. Now, we read all the time, it's becoming more prevalent in the modern times in which we live today, and that is juvenile delinquency, where little children are committing crimes that were unheard of a number of years ago, and a number of judges now are beginning to apply adult rules and principles to youngsters who are as young as 14 years, maybe even younger, because they commit crimes that adults commit. Now, how does God view juvenile delinquency? And I can tell you, juvenile delinquency in many, many cases lends itself to career criminals. That's how they become career criminals. We hear of career criminals, don't we? How does God view delinquency and career criminals? Deuteronomy 21. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, who, when they have chastised him, will not heed them. Now, it gives you the presumption that the parents have tried to do something. If the parents haven't tried to do anything, that may be another matter. Then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of the city, to the gate of the city. And they shall say to the elders of this city, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He's a glutton and a drunkard. He's worthless. Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death. So shall you put away the evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Sounds very, very, very tough, doesn't it? Well, I tell you, if we had laws like that today, we would not have juvenile delinquency, and we would not have career criminals. Plain and simple. Now, tied right in with that, what about contempt of court? You know, how many of these criminals do we read about? They're on parole, and they violate their parole. You know why they're put back in jail? Because of contempt of court. They've not followed a court order. You know, the court says this or the court says that. Which, by the way, is just a euphemism for the judge. Deuteronomy 17, verse number 8. If a matter arises which is too hard for you to judge, they had difficult things, they had to be kicked up to a higher level. Between degrees of guilt for bloodshed, between one judgment or another, or between one punishment or another, matters of controversy within your gates. So now they're taking it up to a higher court. Then you shall arise and go to the place which the Lord your God shall choose, which would be, of course, where the tabernacle was located. And you shall come to the priests, the Levites, and to the judge there in those days and inquire of them. They shall pronounce upon you the sentence of judgment. So it was determined and it was settled by the judge there at this tabernacle site or temple site, wherever he was located. Now let's pick it up here and notice what we read in verse 10. You shall do according to the sentence which they pronounce upon you in that place which the Lord chooses, and you shall be careful to do according to all that they order you. Better pay attention, and you better obey. According to the sentence of the law in which they instruct you, according to the judgments which they tell you, you shall do. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left of the sentence. In other words, you're not allowed to be extreme either to the right or left. You just follow what you're told to do, which they pronounce upon you. Now, the man who acts presumptuously and will not heed the priest who stands to minister before the Lord your God or the judge, that man shall die. That's what contempt of court meant in ancient Israel. You didn't obey the judge, it was a death sentence. So you shall put away evil from Israel. So that gives you another example here of how God's law, the physical laws involving crime with a physical nation, a physical people, apply. That's not going to happen today. So, you know, don't expect anything like that to take place. But you need to be aware of it anyway, and you need to recognize why we have all of crime and the problems that exist in modern societies today, because of political correctness. What about false witnesses? It happens all the time, doesn't it? How does God view false witnesses? Well, let's notice Deuteronomy chapter 19 and verse number 16. If a false witness rises against any man to testify against him of wrongdoing, so we're talking about a false witness here, then both of the men of the controversy shall stand before the judge, before the priests and the judges who serve in those days, and the judges shall make careful inquiry. Now, they did not have an adversarial system like we have. And I suppose as long as the nation were trying to obey God, they would have a system like this. But as already pointed out, this system that developed under the kings in England and in most places in Europe became so corrupt and so evil, they just used the system against anyone without proof. And one of the big gimmicks was that if anyone was pronounced guilty, he was automatically pronounced guilty of treason, and if he were pronounced guilty of treason, all of his belongings were confiscated by the king. Remember what happened to this man who lived adjacent to Ahab and owned that property? What did Jezebel concoct? Why, she said, he's guilty of treason. That's why they took his property. That's a law that goes back a long, long time. So here we have a cross system. A cross system of judges, probably different judges coming at different angles. And I mean, by the time they got done with you, they knew the truth. And don't think people who don't delve in that kind of thing regularly know what they're doing. And they can pick something out very quickly. They can spot somebody who's phony and lying very rapidly. The judges shall make careful inquiry, and indeed, if the witness is a false witness who has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought you have done to his brother. That's right, he gets the same penalty he wanted to see his brother get. Now that's a fair, just system, isn't it? What about perjury? Lying on the witness stand. Does that happen all the time? You bet it does. Leviticus 6, beginning in verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, if a person sins and commits a trespass against the Lord by lying to his neighbor, so even to lie to your neighbor was regarded as a trespass against God, lying to his neighbor about what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or about a pledge, or about a robbery, or if he has extorted from his neighbor, or if he has found what was lost and lies concerning it, and swears falsely. In any one of these things that a man do in which he sins, then it shall be, because he has sinned and is guilty, that he shall restore what he has stolen, or the thing which he has extorted, or what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or was a lost thing which he found, or all that about which he has sworn falsely, he shall restore its full value and add 1/5 more to it. 20% penalty. That's right. It didn't pay these people very much to be dishonest, as long as that system was right and just and doing the right thing. And that depended, of course, on the king and how long they obeyed God, which they didn't do very long. But at least it illustrates how God views crime and how these things could be resolved. Just dealing with a carnal-minded, physical people. About slander. See, all of these things we hear about all the time, don't we, in the newspapers. We read about these events that take place. We see it in action. Well, here's what you read in Leviticus 19, verse number 16, regarding slander. You shall not go about as a talebearer among your people. Don't go around repeating things, especially when you don't have any basis for it and it's going to be saying anything evil against someone. Now, the prime example of this is in Deuteronomy chapter 22. Deuteronomy 22 and verse 13. If a man takes a wife and goes into her and detests her and charges her with shameful conduct and brings a bad name upon her and says, I took this woman, and when I came to her, I found she was not a virgin. Now, this is under the presumption that she told him she was a virgin, and he claims she wasn't. Now, I'm not going to go through all the technicalities here about how the decision was reached. It really involved a matter of casting lots, and God gave the answer to the judges or the elders. And then, what do we read here in verse 18? Then the elders of the city shall take that man and punish him. He's presumed. Now, he lied. It was found out that he actually lied here, and this girl was a decent girl. They shall fine him 100 shekels of silver and give them to the father of the young woman because he has brought a bad name on a virgin of Israel, and she shall be his wife. He cannot divorce her all his days. Well, now, let me ask you a question. How much is 100 shekels of silver worth. The going price for a slave for 1,500 years was 30 pieces of silver. Remember when Judas sold Christ out? What did they give him? 30 pieces of silver. You know what 30 pieces of silver was worth? A year's wages. What was 100 shekels of silver? Who could come up with 100 shekels of silver? That's more than 3 years' wages. Kind of costly, isn't it? That's what he had to pay for slandering someone. So it is a serious thing. Now let's take the last thing we want to look at today, and that's debt. You know, how many times do we read about people who are involved in problems and they're in debt? In fact, I was just watching the TV yesterday evening, and I think it said the average American household has in credit card debt $8,000. $8,000 in credit card debts. And it was giving the figures that it would take you to pay it off if you paid a minimum amount. I think it was 40, with an 18% rate of interest, it was 47 years to pay it off. Boy, these credit cards are one of the worst curses that ever came on anyone. People sucker for those things, and I mean, they're trapped. Leviticus 25. Leviticus 25, verse number 39. Here's what happens when someone is one of these type of people that just can't get out of debt, and he's just constantly poor. If one of your brethren who dwells with you becomes poor and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave. So what happened to people who what we would call are welfare cases today? They sold themselves as I wouldn't exactly call it slavery, but it was a condition where they were obligated to serve a certain man for a certain period of time in order to get by. What do we have today in our welfare system? We have a system that enables people to continue on that kind of a lifestyle, and many of them can actually make more money staying on welfare than going out and working for a minimum wage. They're caught up in that trap, and the government enables them, and you know, I think if you realize what's behind it, this is a good way that politicians get votes. Keep voting the largesses to the public, so they'll keep voting them in office. It's nothing more than a gimmick to win votes. As a hired servant and a sojourner, he shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. Whenever that year came up, that was their 50th year. Whatever time period he went in and sold himself during that time period, he was obligated until the year of Jubilee. Notice verse 47. Now, if a sojourner or stranger close to you becomes rich, and one of your brethren who dwells by him becomes poor and sells himself to the stranger or sojourner close to you or to a member of the stranger's family, after he is sold, he may be redeemed again. One of his brothers may redeem him. So he could have somebody buy him back if they could come up with the money. He shall reckon with him who bought him. The price of his release shall be according to the number of years from the year he was sold to him until the year of Jubilee. It shall be according to the time of a hired servant for him. If there are many years remaining, according to them, he shall repay the price of his redemption for the money which he was bought. And if there remain but a few years until the year of Jubilee, then he shall reckon with him, and according to his years shall he repay him the price of his redemption. That's how welfare cases were handled. They couldn't go to the government and sign up and get a largesse from the government, start living off the dole. Sure, the Israelites were told to help the poor, and many of them did. And there are probably many poor people who never got to the place where they did this. But you did not have a system where you had people living off the dole at the taxpayers' expense and never getting out of that rut and just going on endlessly in debt. It's one of the worst curses that can ever befall someone. And the sad part about it is the society in which we live today lends itself to that, and people have a very difficult time avoiding it. So let me just close by reading this text to you once again, because I asked the original question here, do you know the law? Why is it important to know the law? Well, here's what we read. It says, we read in 1 Corinthians 6, verses 2 and 3. Do you not know the saints will judge the world? And if the world will be judged by you, are you unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Do you not know we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life? We can't change the system, but we can certainly know what's wrong with it. And when the time comes, God willing, if we make it into God's kingdom, then we all know enough about God's law to know how it's going to be handled.